if we check all the boxes, if we go to the right school, we get the right job, and we show up and we work hard and we do the right things, we make all the right decisions, that we're going to be fulfilled. What often happens is that you achieve everything you set out to achieve and you realize that it feels nothing like what you thought it was going to feel like.
Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
And Bean, today we have a very special guest, Megan Hellerer, career coach and author of Directional Living. You ready?
Super ready.
Hey, Signal listeners.
Hi, guys.
Before we get into this week's episode, we just wanted to share a quick announcement. We want to make sure that we are constantly giving you quality episodes. And so to make sure we can keep up with that pace, we are going to be switching our release schedule from coming out once a week with a new episode to now every other week. So do not fear if you don't see us in your feeds next week. We will be back the week after. And from now on, there will be a new episode of Signal in your feeds every other Wednesday. Thank you for being such loyal and wonderful listeners. And as always, if you want to help us continue to reach people, share these episodes with those that you love. Thanks.
Thanks.
Hi, Bean.
Hi there. How's it going?
Hi, Megan.
Hi, Megan.
Hi, ladies.
Hi.
It's so nice to have you with us. We're super excited to talk to you.
Super duper excited.
Likewise, thank you so much for having me. And I have been doing a crash course on all of your podcasts, even though I was already familiar. So I can't wait to join the amazing conversations and truly really fun and interesting and resonant conversations you guys have here.
So when we see that one listener spike, Bean, you know what's been happening. It's Megan.
And that's a great transition into our cringe delight because – Megan, I don't know if you did listen a couple weeks ago. You were my delight. I was like, I reached out to this woman. I'm reading her book. It's amazing. I reached out blindly and she was like, I know your podcast. And I used that as my delight. I felt like an absolute celebrity.
Fangirl. You were a fangirl.
I was so, I couldn't believe it. I was shocked to my core.
I did not listen to that episode, but that I'm so touched and honored by that. That's so sweet.
Awkward, Bean. Bean, what? Do you have another cringe delight or is that your one for this week?
I actually have a nice delight. It's a delight and a cringe, but it's in a lovely way, is that I just received this morning a date for my second child's bat mitzvah. As we all know, last year, I rapped on my first child's bat mitzvah and it was all I talked about for about 4 to 8 months. And as we're finally coming down from it, I just received word. This one will be much calmer and quieter. And it really gave me pause. Like life is just zooming on by. I mean, my daughter's only 10. They give us the dates pretty far out. But
pretty far out, 3 years in advance,
two and a half, because all the venues book out. You have to book your DJs. You have to book your stuff. Layla is not doing a big one. So this will be nothing like it. But so it just really gave me a moment instead of panic of like, how am I going to get this all done? Of like, wow, she's going to be there. She's going to be a teenager before I know it. And my babies are all getting really big. But it's still delightful.
Give me that date ASAP. I'm coming no matter what you're doing.
All right. You got to ask permission.
Layla, she's my best friend. Get out of here. Maybe you're not going to be invited. Okay. That's really sweet.
I know.
Well, Megan, since you're our special guest, how about you go next? Do you have anything cringy or delightful to share with us?
I have both, and I'm so torn between them. And actually, my delight is very short, so maybe I'll give you the delight, and then I'll give you the cringe, because the cringe is funnier. The delight is that since, you know, as I was working on my book for the past few years, I haven't been seeing as many one-on-one clients. And since the book has come out, I've been able to open up space to so many more one-on-one clients, which is like my first and true love. I love one-on-one work. And so I onboarded like 6 new clients in the past couple of weeks, and it is just lighting me up and it is so much fun and really feels so energizing. So that is my delight. I'm feeling so inspired and on fire by my work these days.
Awesome.
I love that.
And my cringe is that – My 1.5-year-old daughter is already having a bit of a sleep regression where she wakes up in the middle of the night and thinks it's like time to party. And they say she's like practicing skills. I'm not totally clear what skills it is that she's practicing.
Party skills.
Yeah. And so her party skills are off the charts. Oh. And so that's already happening. And my husband was away and I had just, she had been up for like 2 hours. I'm just getting her back to sleep from like 1 to 3 in the morning. All of our fire alarms start chirping and going off. And she is just like, of course, freaking out. And I'm like holding a crying 1.5-year-old trying to run around, like find the batteries. And I don't even know where the batteries are. And then I'm like in the basement with the surge protect, like the surge, whatever. And replace the batteries and they still didn't stop chirping. And so then I had to like watch YouTube videos to figure out how to disconnect them in the middle of the night. It was like a 2-hour ordeal and it was like laughably horrendous. Thank God for Miss Rachel, which like got her chilling for a little bit. It sucked. And I feel like I'm not someone who does well on little sleep. So
me either.
I feel like I'm still recovering like 2 nights later. So that's my cringe for the week.
You said it was funny and Maury and I, our faces were like pure horror. The entire, nothing about it made me laugh. It sounds terrible for you.
It was
horrible.
I was like, my parents live 45 minutes away. And I was like, maybe we need to get in the car and go to my parents. Like this might never stop. And I have no idea what to do. And I'm here alone. I mean, you have to laugh though. Like in what world do all of your fire alarms start going off in the middle of the night with an 18-month-old when you're by yourself? Like that's insane. So
that is actually really crazy that they all did it at the same time. I remember when I was dating TJ and we were like bi-coastal. And I was really focused on staying independent as a single mom. Like, it was like, I don't need you. I don't need a dude. And those damn chirping fire alarms would always cause me to freaking FaceTime him and be like, help me figure this out. Because they can be a puzzle. Like, you never know which one's chirping either.
Totally. And I think apparently there's like some feature that if one starts going off, all of them start going off.
Oh, no.
So it's like an intentional thing, which seems not like a bug, but anyway, that's my story of the week.
Well, we're glad that you look very well rested.
I was going to say, she looks fresh faced.
Yeah, fresh as a daisy. All right, well, I'll go. Let me tell you my cringe. Last night, TJ and I decided to walk down to dinner. We're not spending a ton of time together right now because I'm in book press world. We take the dog, we walk down to this restaurant we have here called Corner Tap. And this poor manager, I think manager, comes out and he's just like, you can tell, like discombobulated.
Oh, buddy.
And he sees Kaya, our dog, and he's like, she's jumping all over him. You know how she is, Bean. And he's like, you know, I'm apologizing. He's like, no, let her do it. I just, I love it. I just put my dog down this afternoon or this morning.
Oh,
and we both were like, oh my God. Okay. Feeling obviously so terrible for him. But he's so discombobulated that he like can't take our order, can't he's talking about it, but he's like, I don't want to be sad about it. Also, what's your order? And so we order drinks and I'm like, can I taste this one wine before I get a full thing? He comes out with 4 bottles. He puts them on the table with a glass. He's like, just do it. Just go ahead. You can taste whatever you want. And TJ orders a tequila on the rocks and he brought out the full bottle of Don Julio with the glass of rocks and was like, here you go, just leaves everything on the table.
He was just
away.
Like, F it.
Yeah, he was grieving.
Like, what? Oh, buddy. I know. So anyway, poor guy. And then he came out later. He's like, someone's going to take over for me. I'm just going to go have a drink and take the rest of the night off. We were like, yes.
That
cheer.
Is a good idea. Yeah.
You deserve to do that.
Buddy. I know. I feel sad. I'm also not laughing at your cringe.
I'm sorry. I know. I'm sorry that I hit you with a sad thing. But
seriously.
Anyway.
Anyway.
Without further ado, we want to talk to you about your book and about your work. So
quickly though, I want to say that the reason this all happened was because I had been reading your book because I'm in this weird phase in my life where I just stopped being a stay-at-home mother and started working and luckily have the comfort of working for my best friend, but sort of like I'm 42. Where am I going? What am I doing? I'm just sort of doing odd jobs here and there with her. And I didn't really have anything. And I was feeling stressed about it. And I'm working with this other person who's also a friend of mine. And she said, you have to read this book. It's going to solve all your problems. And I read it and I was like immediately put at ease by your idea of it doesn't have to be like, I don't have to know who I'm going to be when I grow up right now. I just have to be moving in the direction and it has to feel right. And what I do know is that what I'm doing right now feels right. Do I know if it's what I'll be doing in 10 years? No idea. But it feels like I'm moving in a direction, and that in itself carries a lot of weight that we don't give enough, we don't focus on enough. So thank you.
I'm so happy to hear that. And I mean, that's a big reason why I wrote the book. I think there's so much pressure around this, and it actually is the thing that gets in our way. Like, it's self-defeating when we're like, I have to define it. I have to know my purpose, find my purpose. And I can't start doing anything until I define it. And so we have to like sit there and think really hard and figure it out. And the point that you said about, you know, that you just need to know the direction or you don't need to know where you're going. It's not only that you don't need to know, but you cannot know exactly where you're going. Like, you are going to unfold, the world is going to unfold, you know, and so much of this is about our effort to control and have certainty. But the goal, for myself included, is like, it's when you can really internalize this, it's such a relief. And that's when, and I mean, more, you know this, you know, you've written the book on this, that, you know, that's when we can really connect to our intuition or your inner navigation system, as I call it, or whatever, you know, those, that's when we make the best, most aligned decisions for ourselves, is when we come from that place of relief. And peace and calm, and knowing like I only need to go in the right direction and I only need to know the single next directionally right step. When we can really internalize that, it changes everything.
Totally.
So let's get personal to start. What brought you to this method and to writing this book? Tell us about you and how you started coaching in this way.
Yeah. So I coach people I call underfulfilled overachievers. And like many people I know and many coaches and many creatives, I started coaching underfulfilled overachievers because I am the original underfulfilled overachiever. I spent my whole life like checking all the boxes, doing all the right things, like the straight A student, the president of all the things, went to Stanford undergrad, went right into working at Google, like eagerly climbed the ladder, got the promotions and this and that and the other thing. And meanwhile, when I was at Google, I knew like pretty much from day one, this was not the right fit. But I could not leave and I didn't know what else to do and I didn't know how to think about it. And I just felt like I had to stay and I had to make it work. And I became so depressed and so anxious. I was having like nearly daily panic attacks. I changed all the things. I changed managers. I changed cities. I changed offices and teams. And, you know, and I was so ashamed of this fact that I had, you know, the best job in the world at the dream company. And I did everything I had set out to do. And how was I so incompetent or so ungrateful that I couldn't figure out how to make this work, or I couldn't figure out what else I wanted to do. And so I also wasn't sharing this with anyone, and it started affecting, you know, all parts of my life until I couldn't do it anymore. And I, not even with an intentional decision, basically ended up taking a sabbatical. And then when I was supposed to go back, totally unplanned, was just like, I'm not coming back on Monday. I can't do it. And that was it. And I quit my job with zero plan, which was completely not in character for me. Definitely like need the 401k and the paycheck and the regular paycheck and the W-2 and all these things. Right. And so I thought I was going to feel like this incredible high and like I'm free. But instead it, you know, flipped into this entirely new phase of shitty in which I was battling with this sort of ego death or identity crisis of who am I without this title, without this business card, without like, how do I even introduce myself? And that's sort of the genesis of all of this work. And when I started to look around after leaving Google for help, like, how do I get myself out of this? There really weren't a lot of places to go. You know, this was 2013, 2014. Coaching it existed, but not in the way, in the scale that it does now. And most coaches were either like super woo, like crystals and Akashic records, which I love, but was not what I needed in this time. Like I needed a job. I had no income and I had no one supporting me. And, or like executive coaching, which was like, at least at the time, like climb the ladder faster, how to like executive presence. And neither of those two things fit the bill. And I was going on meditation retreats and doing the yoga and I went to therapy, but none of these things were like really doing it. I wasn't finding the answers I really needed, and everything helped in some way, but I realized I kind of needed to create my own way through this. And so it was really out of necessity to save my own life and figure out how to do this whole career thing in a way that actually felt fulfilling and truly didn't make me want to die every day. And through that process of just figuring out how to help myself, I kind of stumbled into a coaching class, and I thought I was going to coach myself and just to like figure out basically my next corporate career, which, because I was still like, that's where I'm going. When I recover and I'm not depressed anymore, then I'm going to go back to my like corporate trajectory. And I fell in love with it. And I was just like, this is my language. Like, this makes sense. This is what I've been looking for. And so, of course, I was like, this is way too much fun. This resonates way too much and is too easy. So this is not work and this is not a career. So I stopped. I quit. And I kept doing all the other things I was going to be doing, you know, and eventually I went back to it. And before I even finished the certification process, I had sent an email to like a few friends being like, hey, I'm doing this thing. I really don't know what I'm doing, but if anybody wants to be a guinea pig, coach you for a cup of coffee. And I had been gone from Google almost a year at that point. So like I had kind of been doing my own, you know, reconciliation process through that whole time, and had made a lot of changes, and their lives started changing. My life started changing. And before I knew it, like truly they... It was like the easiest thing in some ways that I've ever done, in the sense that they started referring people to me. They signed up for more sessions. And this was, I was like a very reluctant coach. I was super skeptical about the industry, whether I could make a living doing this, like what it was anyway. And I basically just decided I have to give this a try. Like this is something I can't not do. And what I found is I was coaching them, not directly from the way that I was trained, but more from this, my own playbook that I was starting to form. And through that language I had already been forming and continuing to work with underfulfilled overachievers, and seeing just like how many of us there were, and realizing like this is an epidemic and what is going on, not just for me, but for all of us. Like, what is it that we have in common? How did we get here? How do we get out of it? And eventually, again, over the, you know, 10 years that I've been working with underfulfilled overachievers and doing this work, developing this into a consistent methodology that I've found, to my great surprise, like there is actually a systemic way and a sort of a blueprint and a guide for how you can find fulfillment in your life. It's going to look completely different for everyone. But the methodology, the way to get there, is there is a roadmap. And so that is sort of how I came to this work, from my own pain truly, and eventually writing a book for all of the underfulfilled overachievers out there to, I mean, in my pipe wildest dream is every, like no one ends up in a position that I did of having panic attacks on the floor of a corporate bathroom, feeling lost and alone and not knowing where to turn to find fulfillment and purpose and meaning in their life.
Why does our culture produce so many underfulfilled overachievers?
I would say it's because we are taught to live destinationally. So in my framework, what I realized is that all of us underfulfilled overachievers and all of us in our culture have been taught to live destinationally. And what we want to do is shift into living directionally. And to live destinationally means to be outcome oriented, basically, to focus on the outcome and then reverse engineer whatever we're going to do into a precise path and then follow that path to a T. And the problem with that is that it actually doesn't work. oftentimes, the outcome that we're anticipating, we get there and we figure out this actually isn't what I want, or it doesn't exist anymore. And so we're sort of presented with this false certainty through this process, which feels more comforting at first, but actually doesn't pan out in the end. The other reason that we do this, in addition to the fact that it feels safer, is that we are taught to externalize these things, right? Instead of looking for like, what is my personal purpose and what is the life I want to live and what is aligned for me, we've been taught to believe that the path to fulfillment is through advancement. And so the way we do that is accumulate as many achievements as we can as quickly as possible. And how we define our achievements is by looking around and asking everyone else or inherited beliefs about what success is, what is achievement, what achievements are worthwhile, instead of asking ourselves these questions about what's meaningful to me. And so we have this belief that fulfillment is from achievement, when actually fulfillment comes from alignment. So it's not that I don't think people should achieve or accomplish things, and I'm certainly not anti-success or ambition, but in a directional sense, it's directional living comes from you as opposed to from outside of you. So instead of these shoulds and these, you know, this is the objectively right thing to do, or these are, you know, this is how it's going to be perceived as successful, or all of these various ways that we again, externalize and take hints from other people and outside of ourselves and inherited beliefs, we really switch to living from our own internal navigation system, our own intuition. And so it's this living destinationally, which involves, again, you know, this outcome orientation, which also means that when we're living, and then it's externalizing, right? Which is great for like the powers that be, because that's all imitation. So we're all doing the cookie cutter thing about like, right, here's how we climb the ladder to keep all the power, you know, people in power and the corporations the way that they are, and the people, you know, whatever the systems are that are intact. You know, a lot of this is capitalism also, right? Like our worth is based on our achievement. So the more we achieve, the more worthy we think we are. And we're trying to prove our worth all the time. And so what I found is that all of these things contribute to this way of living destinationally. And if we can make this big, but actually small, manageable shift to directional living, which means switching the orientation to inside of us and switching to the direction we're moving in instead of the destination we're moving in, all of that gets reoriented. Mm.
Do you see why I wanted to have her on? I mean, I feel like you guys have a similar track path. And an extremely similar message. I mean, your inner navigation system is basically your talking of higher self and speaking about how we have to go inward and stop focusing on the external.
I'm just being quiet to let you ask a question, because I could railroad and ask 10 more. You know how?
No, keep going. Keep going.
Well, no, and I said to you in response, which is why you're hearing me be quiet, is like when we bring guests on this podcast, I really want to showcase your work.
Totally.
And so I just really want to hear your perspective, because our listeners hear my perspective about intuition all the time, but obviously complete alignment around external validation versus internal wisdom and tuning into what is true for you rather than the conditioning of what you've been taught to look at externally. I think I wanted to ask you about this topic around breaking up with the achievement lie. I think you do such a brilliant job of branding these concepts into smaller things we can understand. Can you talk to us about the achievement lie and what you mean by that?
Yeah, so the achievement lie is, I sort of referenced it, but the achievement lie is basically this belief that the way to your best life, or the way to fulfillment and the way to purpose, is through achievement. So again, we believe that if we check all the boxes, if we go to the right school, we get the right job, and we show up and we work hard and we do the right things, we make all the right decisions, that we're going to be fulfilled. And what often happens, at least for the underfulfilled, myself and the underfulfilled overachievers that I work with, and why they usually come to me, is that you achieve everything you set out to achieve and you realize that it feels nothing like what you thought it was going to feel like. We feel like there's going to be, if we achieve enough of the right things, there's this guaranteed happiness or this guaranteed fulfillment. And the reality is that isn't the reality. Fulfillment does not come from achievement. It comes from aligned achievement. So the achievements that are uniquely well-suited to you and your purpose. And so what does, to reiterate, it's not about achievement. It's about alignment. And alignment to me means, again, the things that are particular to you and no one else. So building the life that is your life. And to me, when I look back at my life, it was a great life. It just wasn't my life. And this is something, you know, a lot of people come and talk about imposter syndrome, or I'm feeling imposter syndrome. And to me, there's imposter syndrome is because we're often because we're behaving like imposters, right? Mm-hmm. I was an imposter in my own life. I was performing a life that wasn't mine. So of course I felt like an imposter. It wasn't this like secret belief that I wasn't good at my job, which is, or like some self-doubt in terms of my competence. It was a feel, or like even being found out. It was more like being found out by myself, or being found out that like, I actually don't want to be here and I hate doing this. And so it's not that no one should live that life. It just wasn't my life. And that is the thing that we are not taught to do or to think about. Mm. And I think that's what becomes so hard. So many people, when they come, you know, and many people will ask, and so many people ask me this, and you'll never really hear me ask this question in this way, because they were like, well, why don't you just like do what you want or do what you love? And for someone, for many of us, for me, and for someone who has been so sort of systematically suppressing that, the question, the answer to the question of what I want, it's not like I have some secret dream that I just like wasn't saying out loud or didn't know how to get to. Like and most other underfield overachievers, like I knew how to get shit done, right? If I knew what I wanted, I had no doubt that I could make that shit happen. The problem was I didn't know what I wanted, and I didn't have any idea how to ask that question or where to even begin to answer that question. So there's this like recovery of a sense of self that has to happen. We have to like relearn how to listen to that thing. You know, for me, a big thing, the, you know, alignment comes from curiosity and from joy. That's how you know what is aligned for you. And so I often say like, forget your purpose and follow your curiosity. And curiosity and joy are the building blocks of fulfillment. And so if every step you're taking has curiosity and joy involved, then the outcome is going to have curiosity and joy involved, right? Like wherever you end up, whatever direction you're heading in, all the things you accomplish are going to be filled with fulfillment and joy. And so we really need to, but so many of us have been trained that curiosity is getting in the way of your ambition. It's getting in the way of your accomplishment. You know, for me, think of going, you know, the story I just told about going to my coaching class, curiosity and joy all over the place. And I was like, but this is getting in the way of my like direct and linear up into the right path to my whatever CEO-ness. Instead of being like, wow, this is telling me exactly where I need to go. To me, I liken curiosity to hunger, which is where, you know, cravings show you where the nourishment is. Curiosity cravings show you where the purpose and the fulfillment are. And so instead of suppressing those things, we want to follow them. We want to cultivate them. And we're not, many of us aren't used to doing that. We think really hard about like what strategically makes the most sense to advance my career instead of like, I'm going to go do this thing just because. And I think that is one of like the most basic elements when people say like, where do I even begin? It's like, start following your curiosity and start trying to tune in and calibrate this inner navigation system so that you can even start to recognize when something is aligned for you or not aligned for you. Even things as small as like, what am I having for dinner? You know, so many times people will be like, oh, I'm having this thing because it's healthy or because I should, or da, 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 da. Instead of being like, what do I really want to eat for dinner tonight? Or what TV show do I really want to eat, really want to watch? Am I reading this book because I think I should and it's like on all the bestseller lists? Or am I reading it because it really is inspiring to me? And I think those are some of the like really basic places we can start and like roll up from there.
Mm. Can I interject and be difficult and you can coach me through this and explain to somebody like me? Because I am truly in the middle. I mean, I am your target audience. I am exactly there.
Bring it.
So if let's say every night for dinner, I'm like, I want a slice of cheesecake because it's delicious and that's what I want. But I can't eat cheesecake every night. I can't. It won't give me the nourishment I need. It is too caloric. It will cause other devastations in other areas of my life. Similarly, I have the fear that everything I'm doing with Maury right now feels joyful. I consistently am happy. I never feel like this job is work. It feels like I'm in a supportive environment doing something I want to be doing. However, I do have, I guess, a destination in mind of trying to become financially independent as, you know, I've been home with my kids and now I want to become my own person, right? So I'm thinking to myself, this is so great. I'm loving this. I'm loving this. But is this going to get me to the financial independence that I want? Or is this potentially, I love you, Bean, wasting my time that I could be building up at another place towards my financial goals? How would you coach somebody, or how would you coach me in this situation? Like, I don't know the right answer here.
So, okay. So a couple of things. So the first thing is on the cheesecake example, I would argue that you would get sick of it, right? Like, so there's a couple of ways we can think about this. I think if you let yourself eat cheesecake for a week, you would be like, I don't really want to eat cheesecake anymore. Yeah. And you've just been like telling yourself you can't have it so much, or you're going to have a bite of it once a week, or you're going to have a bite of it every night, or whatever it is. And I think that's part of it, is that we're so terrified of our own curiosity and our own joy. And I think that's a big piece of it. Now, if there could be other, and so here, I would say do an experiment, right? If we were talking about that example, I would be like, let's just say eat as much cheesecake as you want for a week. Let's revisit. If you're still like, the only thing I want to eat after a week is cheesecake, then maybe we need to, I don't know, ask some more questions about it. Like, what is most aligned for you? And is there some balance? Whatever. We would figure something else out. But I'm pretty sure you'd get sick of it.
I don't even like cheesecake that much. I don't know why I said that.
I think to that point, it's so interesting. It's so fun to have someone else here to Coach Bean, because I get these questions from her a lot. And I think when you say you have to trust yourself that you're not going to want that cheesecake, but let's do an experiment, and you, Bean, talk about like the work that we do together beyond the podcast and all the support you do, and you say, is there another job? I have the same kind of reaction, which is like, cool, go test it. Go see if there's another way of doing this, because I think what Megan is saying, where we align, is the most success comes from a sense of joy and fulfillment, right?
Yep.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah. So when you've experienced it in the opposite way, I think, like we have, Megan, where we went into corporate careers, right? And did the outcome-based, this is what I have to earn for me to be a single mom, for Megan to be achieving what she wanted. We already got the message that way went to a dead end, where you haven't, I think, had that experience.
Totally.
Of seeing how when something is soul crushing, it doesn't actually lead to that outcome in the way that when there is joy. That's my take. But Megan, I really want to hear the second part of your coaching around her question about her vocation.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the framework of like, it's hypothesis testing, right? Everything is an experiment. And so again, I don't think we don't do ourselves a service when we sit there and try to think about how we might feel about something. We need to like this, and this is what directional living is all about. Like, you need to go experience it.
Right.
So, and I don't think that means we need to like, quit everything and go start something else and then move across the country. But like, what is a small low stakes way that you could test that? Because clearly there's some hypothesis, like there's a hypothesis here that is like, I would be more fulfilled. And again, fulfilled to me, alignment encapsulates all of these things. I do not believe in the like starving artist, rich sellout situation. So if it's not meeting all of your needs, and again, obviously it's not going to feel perfect 100% every single part of the day. But if it's like very lopsided, meaning you're loving the work, but you're working for free and you can't live your life, that's not alignment to me. If this isn't meeting your financial needs right now, then I would say, great, like start, like see what else is out there. You know, go, even if it's, a homework assignment, I might say is like, go look for other LinkedIn postings or job postings or whatever, places that you could maybe consider work, and just see how you feel. You have done this. So how
it
do
feels
you
horrible, do it? Horrible, horrible. Okay. Everything looks like shit. And I'm like, I just want to work with my best friend. It's just fear constantly being like, but what if you're just doing that because it's so enjoyable? Of course I want to work with my best friend. Like, so who doesn't?
So it sounds like you've done some testing on this. So that was the first thing I would say, is just like, start to feel it out. To me, I think you aren't trusting that signal that like, this feels terrible to me. Like, what I would love for you is for that to be enough to know that is not the right direction.
Me too.
And so my next questions would be like, so how does it feel in your body when you think about doing whatever this other scenario
is? Horrible. I was going to actually ask you, what it felt like for you when you did this coaching, what it felt like in your body. So that as an example to understand, because I do hear from Maury all the time, but I have been friends with her for over 20 years. So it's kind of like, yeah, I know, but I'm not feeling it. I want to know from an outside source what it felt like to you. Because you said from day one at Google was a no-go.
Yeah.
In your body.
Yeah. And this is, yeah. And I think you mentioned, you know, higher. So I call it like true self and fear self. So higher self and true self in the sense that true is a verb that means to put back into alignment, right? So to me, if it's like for underfulfilled overachievers, recovering your true self is to recover a sense of alignment. And I talk about, and I love having people calibrate, meaning think of something you know was so aligned for you, or a decision you know was true for you, or a person, right? Like it could be a partner, it could be a pet, just something that you know, like this is or was aligned for me. For me, that's coaching, right? And how that feels in my body. And it's going to be slightly different for everyone, but I loosely say light and right. For me, that feels, it feels like freedom and expansion. And that's the other sort of like magic busting, fear busting question that I always ask is, where is the freedom and where is the relief? That is always going to be the aligned answer for you. And then on, so for me, coaching is true self. The fear self is Google. Fear self for me means hard and heavy. I tend to, like when I, if I really try to put myself back there, like I feel panicky, like my throat is closing, my chest feels like I probably speak faster. Like I just feel like, I feel tighter. And so for, that's like a great sort of proxy for me when I, and I like to have people have, for people to have shorthands like that, whatever that is, that is their right. specific scenarios, that if I ever am feeling like staticky, like what's the aligned decision here? I can immediately drop into, is this more like Google or is this more like coaching? And immediately I know where is the right direction.
And I think there are a lot of people, and I mean, I'm your target audience. I think there are a lot of people in my situation right now. And I did realize throughout our conversation where the confusion for me lies. It's because it's my best friend. Like I can tell you it's a full body yes. Everything I'm doing with her is a full body yes. But I think the disconnect for me is, does it just because it's my best friend?
Okay, but who? What if it is?
Yeah. Oh, done. You're right. Maybe that is the joy, is working alongside of my best friend.
I mean, another way to look at it is, how freaking lucky are you that you can work with your best friend, make money, have income doing work with, that you get to hang out with your best friend? Like that, I think, so my question for you is like a belief similar to me being with coaching is like, I guess, well, do you believe that work can be fun and playful? Or do you believe that like to make money, you're not like working hard enough, or it's not real work if it feels good?
Yes.
Yeah. And that,
like, how much money can I make loving my life every day?
Right. I mean, no, but that's a great question. And that's an expansive question. But I guess what do you feel like it says about you that you are working with your best friend?
In a positive way or a negative way? Or
what's the fear around that? The part of you that's like, oh, this isn't real work because I'm working with
not even that it's not real work, that it, am I so, is it so cloudy up there for me? Like, is there's clearly not going to be the path to my financial independence? And I'm just so clouded because I enjoy it so much. That's really depressing now that I say it out loud. Like the fact that I enjoy it will stop me from being successful.
That's underfulfilled overachieverness right there. That's total like the brainwashing achievement lie that it's like work is not supposed to feel this good. But let me flip. This is, I often find analogies between work and relationships to be really successful when we take it into a different domain, because I think there's a lot we can learn about like romantic partnership relationships that we can bring to career and things we can bring from career into romantic relationships. So let me ask, if you felt like, wow, I love hanging out with this person, that let's imagine you're in a dating scenario. I love hanging out with this person so much. It's so much fun. We're so connected.
We
can't
get married.
I couldn't date this person. This must be wrong.
You're right. It makes no sense. It's chaos.
Right. You probably wouldn't say that. You'd be like, this is freaking awesome that I get like, and so I think I would look into whatever part of you feels like afraid that it's like too good to be true, almost. Like
100%.
Do I get to have this? Is it 100%. Possible that I could love this work this much, work with my best friend, be this fulfilled after having, you know, the joy and making this decision to stay at home with my kids for the past few years, and now I have this? Like, is this
sometimes
too good
I think
to be true? When is the other shoe gonna drop, or how am I gonna end up regretting this?
That's 100% how I feel. Like, how lucky I chose to stay home. Honestly, my husband kind of wanted me working, and I was like, no, like, this is where I want to be right now. And then I like gently stepped out of it into this other beautiful heaven of working with my best friend. So to me, it's like, life cannot be this beautiful and easy for you. Like, this cannot possibly be. That's exactly right.
That's really, I mean,
that is really sad saying it out loud.
I kind of want to hug that little kid that thinks that. That sucks.
I know.
Yeah. Right. So I would dig into like what, again, if you want to, or if you need to, like what part of you feels that way? And like, where did you learn that? Cause it, yeah. What's happening right now?
Just how sad that is. Like, if my child came to me and said, everything I'm doing is so beautiful and I'm so fulfilled and I'm so happy, like, would I ever say, you need to get out of there? Quick, hightail it the other direction. Like, why can I not give myself that grace and allow myself to feel that level of joy, particularly when I am currently not financially independent, but do have the stability of the financial dependence at this moment in time? Like, it's all just unfolding so seamlessly that I'm scared.
Can I ask you a question about the financial independence? You're getting double...
Yeah, let's go.
Can I ask you a question about the financial independence, though? Like, are you more financially independent than you were 2 years ago?
Absolutely.
How is that not incremental change?
100%. I just fear that my fear voice, my loudest fear voice is, you're wasting all of these years that you could go to like a typical company and work your way up. And then by 55, you know, I'm 42 already. By 55, you would be at X position and making X amount of money. Whereas I'm here and I'm more financially independent, but I don't know where I'm going to be in 2 years from now with Maury or wherever I am. And that I don't do well with that. That's what I don't, there's no clear path with Maury. Like, I'm going to be this role and I'm going to make X amount of money. And that feels really scary to me.
So the flip side of that is that the achievement lie and the destinational lie is that that is a predictable path, that there is some corporation you can go to that's going to have some predictable linear path. And you don't know that. You could get laid off. You could, like, who the hell know? You could hate it. You could, there's so many things like that is, that's the lie that corporations, and again, I'm not anti-corporate or working in corporations, like corporations in their purest form and working on like wonderful things if they're aligned. But the fact that it seems like this certainty is actually not true. And my question around the financial independence is more like, why? And like, to what, like, what does that mean to you? What is important about that to you? And what does financial independence mean?
This really is a coaching session and I'm very much enjoying it.
As am I.
What does that mean?
You thought you were going to be watching the two of us, but this is even better.
What that means to me truly is being able to live with, I've mentioned it many times. I grew up very well off. My parents took care of me and basically like handed me over to my husband before we even married. And he then basically financially supported me in a lot of ways. I've had jobs on and off. I met Maury at a job, but nothing that was lucrative enough to support the lifestyle I was always living. So I have always been dependent on other people. And for a long time, I actually didn't mind it. It like was like, yeah, that's just how it is. And then I think having children probably started to shift my mindset. Like, I'm responsible for these babies. And if anything ever was to happen to my husband or anything, I need to know that I can show up for them in the way that they will need and want, and that I can also show up for me and you know, not feel guilty about certain purchases or living, you know, we've just did an episode on wants and desires and not shaming your desires, that I can afford to get the thing that I want to get or the Botox that I want to get without feeling like, ugh, I shouldn't be spending his money or their money or this because I should be putting it towards groceries. That's what financial independence looks like to me, is living a comfortable lifestyle for me and my children without the aid of anybody else. Why is that important? Because at the end of the day, I have me. and I need to have me. You know, you can't really rely on other people. As I get older, I have support from other people, but you have to be able to take care of you. You have to.
I would maybe put some numbers around what that means to you, because again, like if you're in, I'm all about financial independence, and you're in an interdependent relationship, and you know, like you're in a family unit, and this is like, this is hard for me on the other side, is I can veer so to the independent side, that it's like, no, we can share things and share expenses and like that. So, but I would like, what would that actually like numbers look like for you in this current structure? What would, you know, and start to think, put, because you may be more financially independent in this structure than you think you are.
I think that the beauty, Megan, of where this just went, which is why I fucking love our podcast.
Sorry, I cried.
And my best friend and my co-host is like, this is real life stuff. This isn't just theory that you wrote about. This is something that you clearly were meant to do because you do it so well. And I really appreciate that you actually showed so many of the principles in real time around the way that Melissa was thinking about it. So I want to ask you one final question. Actually two, if that's okay.
Totally.
Okay. So I want you to talk a little bit about this last core principle, which is launch and is it launch and reiterate?
Iterate.
Perfect. Because I'm so fascinated by, again, the way that that's phrased. So answer that for us. And then I have a final question for you too.
Okay. So launch and iterate. So my feeling, so when we're living, one of the things that we get wrong in destinational thinking, again, is that we figure out the outcome, we try to reverse engineer it, and then we try to stick to the plan. Instead, we want to, as we sort of alluded to, we want to launch and iterate. And this comes from tech, where if you, like the tech world, where if you're launching a new product or a new app, nobody expects it to be perfect or done. It's not like you one and done and you put it out in the world. You launch it and you iterate. It's the same thing as testing and learning. So whenever we have a question, instead of trying to be like, I need to know the answer before I begin, what is the smallest step I can take to get more information to help me, which is kind of what we were talking about with, like, look at some job postings and see how you respond to that. Give your inner navigation system some more information to, like, decide how you feel about it. Or if you're trying to decide where to live, like, go visit the place, like, whatever those things are. So, and then we constantly want to be iterating on those things. And I think this helps so much for the perfectionists in us that are like, we want to get the right answer, which is, but this is all having a hypothesis and taking, like, what is the smallest action I can take, or how can I get more information? So if you have a hypothesis, like, I want to start a podcast, so many people would be like, oh, I can't, I don't know how, I'm not qualified, I this, that, the other thing. Instead, it's like, maybe that's true, but, like, get some more information, like, have a conversation with someone who has a podcast, or take a podcasting class, or read an article about podcasting. Just get more information. And my feeling on this is that even if you don't start a podcast, the fact that you're curious about it is moving you in a direction you want to start in. So maybe you aren't going to start a podcast, and it turns out that actually isn't aligned for you. But maybe it's instead, I don't know, a YouTube show, or, you know, I don't, there's some other iteration of this, or you, you know, you actually find out you want to be doing print interviews instead. Like, there's so many ways that this could end up going. And so you want to follow that curiosity without expectation of the results. So we're constantly launching and iterating and testing and learning. And I think that is just such a, we want to live in a world where we're allowed to evolve. And we don't know who we're going to be or what the world is going to be like, especially now. And so this allows us to kind of a framework to live with the uncertainty of being human, frankly.
Yeah, we're just too linear. I mean, I tell this to people when we talk about healing. Healing is not linear. It's a loop. It's a loop. It's a loop. You keep coming back to it. And I think that's what I'm hearing in this.
That's like, completely really like that's, I would say, destinational is linear and directional is not.
So what is one thing each of us who is listening can do when we turn off this podcast to start directionally living?
I think I alluded to this earlier, but I really feel like it is. Okay, so I guess I would say two things. The first thing, quick and dirty, I would calibrate your inner navigation system by thinking of something you know is aligned for you and thinking of something you know that is not aligned for you. So again, for me, coaching and Google, like shorthand. And from, and so figure out what that is and learn what it feels like in your body to be in each of those places. For some people, an easy one is to think of two recent presidents. And one probably feels one way and the other probably feels another way. And think about how, you know, living in that world and what that feels like in your body. And then
I don't want to.
I know, right?
It feels too icky.
But that's what's going to help you avoid living, creating that world for yourself. And then the second thing I would do is start paying attention to the little decisions on what feels aligned and not aligned for you. Things like what you're wearing, right? Like, why are you, does it really feel light and right to wear that outfit? Or are you wearing it because you think that's what someone who does the job that you do would wear, or someone who's like a 42-year-old mom would wear this, or whatever the thing is? Food, books, all these things. And I guess, and then with that, I would make a curiosity list. Like, what are things you're curious about? It's sort of, I call it screenshotting your mind, right? You want to like take, we tend to just eliminate things before we even know, like, I want to start a podcast. Well, that's unrealistic. Boom. I never think about it again. And that really is, you know, a hint from your inner navigation system to pay attention to this. There's something there for you. And the more we pay attention to it, the more good information we're getting from it. So I guess those are the couple of little steps that I want to go for. Okay, I have to say one more thing. I know you guys have a deadline, but I have to come back this with Melissa, which is, I guess, a good probably way to end all of this. But one of my other thoughts or things for you to think about and leave you with is, if you knew that you would continue, you would end up exactly making the amount of money you want to make and be financially independent, doing what you're doing now, continuing to live directionally from where you are right now, what would you do?
Stay at it.
Yeah. And I think that's what tells you it's directionally right. And it's just, again, it's like this fear of anxiety of what may or may not happen in the future. And I think
it's paralyzing.
You know, the quote that sort of like really inspired all of this or solidified this for me, and kind of the best definition of directional living to me, is from E.L. Doctorow. And he's writing about writing a novel, but I think it applies to life, which is it's like driving in the road. It's like driving in the dark at night, It's like driving in the dark, driving on the road at night. You can only see as far as the headlights in front of you, but you can make the whole trip that way. So again, it's like driving at night. You can only see as far as the headlights in front of you, but you can make the whole trip that way. And so you have the headlights. The question for you is that you don't trust it. So I think learning for you, the big thing is like the trust and the faith that you have the right information and that you're listening to and your only job is to move the plot forward, to keep following the headlights. Don't veer off somewhere else. And we also can't expect when we're driving at night to be able to see the entirety of the trip. It doesn't work that way. So again, it's just like, what are my headlights showing me? And it seems very clear to me that your headlights are showing you this. That doesn't mean don't dream or imagine like, what else like this could I do on top of this? Or are there other people hosting podcasts or doing similar work to Maury that you could train? Like, there are many ways that you can expand from here, but I don't think, it doesn't sound like you need to jump ship.
I can't.
Beautiful.
Thank
you. What a great, great way to end. Megan, your book, Directional Living, is available everywhere, right? So please go get this book. And if you were inspired the way we were, I think there's so many nuggets in this book that are super actionable, which is what I love. I love practical, pragmatic, actionable steps. Where else can people find you if they want to continue to stay connected to your great work?
My website is my name, so meganhellerer.com, or on Instagram at meganhellerer.
Amazing. Megan, thank you for showing up and inspiring us today
leaving
us with so much to think about, and just the best of luck with this book and all the great messages you're putting out into the world.
This was definitely my new delight for the week. So thank you for having
me.
What a joy and how much fun this has been. So thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you again for listening to another great episode of Signal. We'll be back next week with a new episode, and we will see you then. Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Bushka, and is edited by our sound editor, Josie Barak.
Stay tuned next week for another episode.